Well, that poem talks about an old man who was dying, and I'd like to read an awfully unpleasant poem about him. He was an old man. I saw his name today on a store in town here. It really shook me up. His name was Fritz Jark. And I saw the name Jark on a store someplace, J-A-R-C-K. I haven't seen it since this man was my patient. I used to work in a Veterans Administration hospital in Iowa City while I was a student there. And I went to work there thinking it was a good kind of work to be doing. I was a recently converted Quaker, convinced. And I thought that was a good kind of work to be doing. I thought most of my patients would be boys who'd been shot up in the Korean War, which was just then ending, if it ever ended. And was very much amazed to get there and find out that the hospital wasn't at all what I thought it would be. We only had, the whole time I was there, there was only one patient from the Korean War, and he was on a ward I wasn't even allowed to enter. We had five or six patients from my war, and everybody else was from World War I, very elderly men who, for whom there was very little you could do. They just needed continual care, good food, a lot of rest. And it made it a very different kind of hospital than anything I had anticipated, and one that made it a great deal harder to somehow sugarcoat the very bitter pill of ever having to work or ever having to do anything I didn't want to do, anything that meant serving someone else. And in this case, you couldn't get it up under some kind of rationale about helping somebody who'd been damaged in a desperate case. No, it was just dirty, ugly work. When you came to a man like Mr. Jark, it got dirtier and uglier and began to make less and less sense the more you did of it. Mr. Jark was not expected to live out the first night that he came there. 3 months later, I came to work there, and he was still there. I took one look at him and thought he was dying of his bed sores, but no, he was dying of lung cancer still, and he lasted out about 8 or 9 months. Toward the end of that time, as many as 8 of us were pouring our full working day into only keeping him alive. And you know, you get to asking yourself if you're making any sense at all. Are you saving him for anything but more pain? Or for more drug, more deadness? He's had so much drugs at this point, you know he can never be well. He can never go home. He certainly, you'd known long ago, he could never be well enough to do anything for the culture that might pay back that kind of care, that other people's work to that extent. As a matter of fact, Mr. Jark didn't even have anyone at home to go home to. There wasn't even anybody who wanted him. There was nothing but his will to go on. And, of course, he had no enemy but himself. There was nobody killing him but himself. And it was a mighty grand and heroic struggle toward the end, but one I'd have been glad not to have had any hand in. And, you know, you get to asking yourself more and more questions to which you don't find any satisfactory answers. I'd find myself coming off after a night of being with... Yeah, you couldn't special him all night. Even the nurses, who were much tougher than any of us, the men who worked there, the aides... The nurses were much tougher than any of us, and they were really, really sort of great girls. But they couldn't special him all night. You simply couldn't stay in the room with that much pain that long. They had to sit out in the hall. I'd come off after one of those nights, and I was also teaching at the university, and I'd have to go meet my class, and I'd get on the elevator and go down. My relief man had come on, and I'd hear myself thinking, "Die today," you know, on his shift. And then you think, boy, how trivial can you get? I mean, that man is dying in such pain that, you know, it's just incredible. And you care whether you have to dress his body or not? Well, you know, maybe you shouldn't, but you really do. I suppose there's some good reasons for identifying with him. Maybe you like him, or if you don't like him, maybe you've come to even to be close to him, whether you liked him or not. In a way, you have to admire the toughness of the side of him that won't quit. But there's surely bad enough reasons, too, why you identify with him. In the long run, I think I just ended up deciding that surely the only reason we were doing that was to indulge him in the fantasy that he could live forever, that he didn't have to face what we all have to face, and we're making it that much worse for him by what we were doing, and vicariously indulging our own similar fantasy. And that surely is a bad reason. But, you know, there's good reasons, too. In any case, you do identify with him. You're the only one he's had. There's a strange moment, maybe after he's had his shot. Most of the time he's weeping for his shot. After he's had it, he has maybe, what, 15 minutes out of pain? So you feed him during that time, and you got a few minutes left, and you light him a cigarette. He's dying of lung cancer, and you light him a cigarette. And he lies back, and you talk to him. And, you know, after that, you don't want to have to dress his body. Well, the man who speaks this poem gets the body to dress, and he's not very happy about it, and he's not very happy about the situation. I think he decides the kind of thing that I did. Probably it's immoral to keep that man alive that way. But whether, you know, it isn't a moral problem at all for you, not as an aide, it's the practical problem of how are you going to live with your feelings. You're in no position to, somebody ought to be making a decision about that man, and that we all could use our energies to better purpose somewhere else to help somebody who might grow up into something different on account of it. But since no one's making a decision, nobody wants to take that kind of responsibility, you certainly can't, and you've just got to learn how to live with your feelings in the meantime. There's one other thing I'll have to tell you about in order to read the poem, unless you're familiar with hospitals, and I hope you never get that way. This man is on what's called a foster frame bed, and it looks like a medieval torture device. It isn't. It's a modern one. Well, as a matter of fact, it can be used for very good purposes. One just saved my son-in-law's life, but he's a young man and had something to do with his life, someplace to go with it. The reason he's on it is that you know that a man has to be turned over 6 or 8 times a day or he will die of his bed sores. And this man was so ill that he couldn't be turned over even by the doctors and nurses without damaging him. So that many times a day, he's on a narrow frame made of black iron, and it has canvas stretched across. It's so narrow, there's no place for his arms. And so if he's lying on his back, you clamp separate arm pieces on out at the side, and he looks like a man crucified on a kind of weird torture contraption. Well, 6 times a day or so, you bring the other half of it, and you sandwich him in the middle. You clamp him down with big, heavy screws all the way around. After you have to coat him all over in salves and foam rubber and turn off all the tubes going in and turn off all the tubes coming out. And then you sandwich him in there. Clamp it down, loosen the central screws on the whole machine, take a good purchase on it, and do the whole thing at once. You go for 8 months on a thing like that, and you really want to not die. I mean, this is called a flat one. That's slang for a corpse. If you're coming on duty, the guy will go on and says, you got a flat one on your ward. That's bad news. A flat one. Old Fritz, on this rotating bed for 7 wasted months you lay, unfit to move, shrunken, gray, no good to yourself or anyone but to be babied, changed and bathed and fed. At long last, that's all done. Before each meal, twice every night, we set pads on your bed sores, shut your catheter tube off, then brought the second canvas and black iron bed frame and clamped you in between them tight, scared, so we could turn you over. We washed you, covered you, cut up each bite of meat you ate. We watched your lean jaws masticate as ravenously your useless food as thieves at hard labor in their chains chew, or insects in the wood. Such pious sacrifice to give you all you could demand of pain. Receive this haddock's body, slain for you, old tyrant. Take this blood of a tomato, shed that you might live. You had that costly food. You seem to be all finished. So we'll plug your old recalcitrant anus and tie up your discouraged penis in a great snow-white bow of gauze. We wrap you, pin you, and cart you down below, 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 because your credit has finally run out. On our steel table, trussed and carved, you'll find this world's hard-working, starved teeth working in your precious skin. The earth turns in the end, by turn about, and opens to take you in. 7 months. Gone down the drain. Thank God that's through. Throw out the 4x4s, swab sticks, the thick salve for bed sores, throw out the diaper pads and drug containers. Pile the bedclothes in a wad and rinse the cider jug half filled with the last urine. Then empty out the cotton cans. Autoclave the balls and spit pans. Unhook the pumps and all the red tubes. Catheter. Suction. Oxygen. Next, wash the empty bed. All this dark age machinery on which we had tormented you to life. Last, we collect the few belongings, snapshots, some odd bills, your mail, and half a pack of Luckies. We won't light you after meals. Old man, these 7 months you've lain determined not that you would live, just to not die. No one would give you one chance you could ever wake from that first night. Much less go well again, much less go home and make your living. How could you hope to find a place for yourself in all creation? Pain was your only occupation. And pain that should content and will a man to give it up. Nerved you to grind your clenched teeth breathing till your skin broke down, your calves went flat, and your legs lost all sensation. Still, you took enough morphine to kill a strong man. Finally, nitrogen mustard. You could last 2 months after that. It would kill you then. Even then you wouldn't quit, old soldier. Yet you must have known inside. The animal had grown sick of the world, made up its mind to stop. Your mind, ground on its separate way, merciless and blind, into these last weeks when the breath would only come in fits and starts that puffed out your sections like the parts of some enormous damaged bug. You waited, not for life, not for your death, just for the deadening drug that made your life seem bearable. You still whispered you would not die. Yet in the nights I heard you cry like a whipped child. In fierce old age you whimpered, tears stood on your gunmetal blue cheeks, shaking with rage and terror. So much pain would fill your room that when I left I'd pray that if I came back the next day I'd find you gone. You stayed for me. Nailed to your own rapacious, stiff self-will. You've shook loose. Finally. They'd say this was a worthwhile job, unless they tried it. It is mad to throw our good lives after bad, waste time, drugs, and our minds, while strong men starve. How many young men did we rob to keep you hanging on? I can't think. We did you much good. Well, when you died, none of us wept. You killed for us. And so we kept you because we need to earn our pay. No. We'd still have to help you try. We would have killed for you today.